You guys ready to do this?
Welcome to the Cap Space Wins Cups podcast.
The Dragon!
Double overtime, and the Vancouver Canucks are going to the Stanley Cup Final!
They are simply put the two greatest Canucks of all time. Please welcome Daniel and Henrik Sedin.
Elias Pettersson put it into sport mode.
With Hughes ahead, here's a break. It's Bo Hornman. Beam on the stick. Scores! Game winner for the captain! Scores! Chris Tanev!
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Cap Space Wins Cups Podcast, episode 76 on the Area 51 Sports Network. I am your host, Hassan Ahmed. I am joined alongside, as per usual, my twin brother, Asan Asamed. How's it going, buddy?
Good, man. How are you?
And, of course, by Hussein, who's the Moose Ahmed. Who's how's it going, dude?
What's up, boys?
And our man, Andy Purr, on the phone. Andy, how's it going, dude?
Good. How about you guys?
Oh, I'm doing pretty well. I got a ton of stuff to get into again this week. We'll do our best bets at the end of the week, at the end of the show, sorry, for the Super Bowl. Obviously, it was a great day of football watching again today. And, yeah, and then we'll talk a little bit about the Canucks right now. They had a rough go against the Calgary Flames, but they did dominate the Winnipeg Jets, which was awesome. And we've got some interesting trade rumors coming up, a lot of people's names out there in the media, and we will discuss that. But before we get into all of that, Andy, I know you weren't with us last week. And we did, the three of us here kind of chatted pretty in-depth about JT Miller and our potential trade packages and stuff like that. What are your thoughts on the Miller trade package? What would you be targeting? Do you even want to trade JT Miller? I'll let you take it away here, buddy.
Yeah, I think, I do want to trade JT Miller. I don't see how the team, number one, can sign him. And then number two, how they can sign him to a contract that he can still outperform. So definitely trade him. I think the biggest piece is a right-handed defenseman. Mm-hmm. The two teams I'm looking at the most are the Rangers and Minnesota Wild. I like Cali Addison from Minnesota and Braden Schneider from the Rangers. So I think if you can get one of those pieces plus another draft pick, it's probably a good play. The thing I've kind of heard floating around that I don't mind is don't take a draft pick, but rather take two or three prospects who are 19, 20 years old, simply because that it's going to accelerate the time that they get to the NHL quicker, right? Like, if you think a player you're picking in the 20s, they're probably 2-3 years away from the NHL. Mm-hmm. But if you get a player who's already 20 years old, now he's only maybe a year away from the NHL. So that would be kind of my thinking there.
Kind of agree with that idea because the Canucks have a really depleted prospect pipeline as well. Like, if you look, there's nothing in Abbotsford, pretty much, other than Klimovich. So, if they're looking for, that will be another way to restock the pipeline, obviously. Like, drafting those players would obviously be the best way to do that, but that's obviously going to take years of drafting to refill the prospect cupboard. So, trading a prime asset or a premium asset like a Miller would be a good way to just sort of restock the cupboards other than with just getting a bunch of draft picks.
Yep, I think that's sometimes a scary proposition because if you're drafting yourself, you have your own internal scouting team. You can do all the work on getting these prospects and stuff. So you might know a lot more about the prospect you're drafting. If there's a prospect in another organization, you better be damn sure about what you're getting because, you better know. The old saying, you always know a lot more about the player you're getting rid of than the player you're acquiring, right? So you better be sure about what you're getting in terms of that because I would approach that with a bit of caution. I don't know. Maybe I'm just scared off by how the old regime did things and was, very bad at pro player evaluation. And you end up with Clendennings of the world, Lyndon Vays, and things like that. So that does scare me a little bit. But I don't hate the process. But I guess hopefully with this new regime and administration in power, pro scouting and is a prospect pro scouting kind of, right? Like that kind of amateur pro scouting tweener area. Hopefully we can operate in there and take advantage of some teams. Who said you want to say something?
Oh, no, I was just going to say I agree. I mean, the draft picks, I think, here, especially, I think it's easier to acquire draft picks from, you know, like those guys like Tyler Mott, Luke Shen. I think those are the kind of guys that you trade and you target for. Let's try to get a third-round pick, you know, in Mott's case, maybe a second or a first if you're lucky. And if you're getting trading a guy like JT Miller, the prospects you're getting back are going to be, like, a much more higher tier. If you do Luke Shen for a prospect, that guy's probably never touching the NHL ice. So, I mean, that's just my take on it.
Fair enough, for sure. I will kind of circle back to this because there have been some other players' names kind of mentioned in trade rumors and things bandied about, so I did want to talk a little more about that. But let's chat a little bit about the games on ice. We haven't had much to chew on regarding that, but obviously this week the Canucks thrashed the Winnipeg Jets 5-1 in front of a sold-out MTS Center, or what's it called now? Canada Life?
Canada Life Center,
right?
Yeah, Canada Life
Center. Obviously with the Winnipeg government implementing some restrictions there. Only 250 people at the game. Canucks win 5-1. JT Miller pumping up his value with a hat-trick in that game. Patterson scores as well. Besser scores one, so great night for all the big guns. Spencer Martin gets his first NHL win, which is awesome. Then the Canucks follow that with a pretty poor effort on Hockey Night in Canada in Calgary. They lose 1-0 in overtime. Johnny Gaudreau scores the OT winner after JT Miller may have been hooked, maybe have been slashed, but either way, dropped his stick and then did back check, goes 3-on-2 the other way, and they score. So might have diminished some of that goodwill he had. He was called up by Bruce Boudreau after the game. Tyler Myers was ejected in this game for a pretty suspect hit on Trevor Lewis. Canucks weren't really able to generate many shots. I think Calgary outshot them 31-15 by the end. I'll kind of just open the floor to anyone who wants to jump in here in terms of their thoughts on the last two games of this week. Or did we talk about the Edmonton game last week? No, we did, right? The OT loss?
No, the Edmonton game would have been, you have to recap that
right,
one too.
Right, yes, of course. They lost to 3-2 to the Oilers after a 2-0 lead. Outshot 50-22 or something like that. McDavid scores the OT winner. It was a bit of a rough goal there. Maybe some questionable officiating in that game, but the Draisaitl McDavid score in that game as well. So yeah, Canucks, you know, only the one no regulation losses, so 1-0-2, picking up points, but they were giving up points to, you know, teams in their division and conference, so not ideal. But yeah, I will open up the floor. Should I start with Andy? I'll start with Andy.
Yeah, well, we can scrub that Calgary game. That was one of those boring hockey games I've ever watched. The only good thing, I guess, to come out of that game is that JT Miller took some heat. It seemed to be universally recognized in the market that he didn't make a great play, so hopefully there'll be less crying when he's traded in 2 weeks. The Winnipeg game, good for Spencer Martin to win. I mean, it's nice to see Miller pump up his trade value with the hat trick. What's his name? Pedersen scored again. So, you know, when you win 5-1, 6-1, whatever it was, can't complain about that. The Edmonton game, I didn't get to watch the third period of overtime. I was actually at my own hockey game that Hussein was not able to attend, but that's okay.
He was actually at the game.
McDavid scores in overtime. Like, what are you going to do, right? He's the best player in the league. So, I don't know. But it sucks to lose that game, but
especially
it is what
it is,
nothing, I guess.
You know?
Yeah, that's the part that hurts more, right? Is that you were up 2-0 and then you lost.
Yeah, I mean, towards the Edmonton game, Mott also had a second shorthanded breakaway on that power play that the Oilers didn't score on, but eventually led to the tying goal. So even more frustrating, you had a real pretty golden chance to kind of put the game to bed there, because I think if the Canucks had gotten the third one there, that might have been it. So tough way to, you kind of felt like you lost 1 point there instead of battling back and gaining one. So tough loss, and you gave up a point to a team that is in your division. You're kind of right chasing. Winnipeg was a fun game to watch. Nice to see the guy, some of the big guns score a few goals. JT Miller probably the crate value, which is nice. Calgary game, not going to talk about it. That was terrible. Super boring to watch. Kind of said like one shot, like 15 minutes into the game. So that should tell you all you need to know.
Yeah, for me, the only thing I'll take away from the Calgary game is that we're so blessed to have Thatcher Demko on this Canucks team and signed to a contract for long term here. Played amazing, but yeah, with Andy and Ace and the rest, that was awful to watch. The short term, to be honest, in that 3-game stretch, I think the penalty kill has been perfect, actually. So, you know, for short term success, and if you're really plugged into the Canucks playoff race here, that's a good sign that the penalty kill is starting to find ways to, you know, not be historically bad. And long term, I think Elias Pettersson looks like he's back these last 3 games. I thought he played really well in the Edmonton and in Winnipeg. I must say, though, I was not happy that they switched him back to wing on Hockey Night in Canada there on the Saturday game. I thought he was really finding his groove at center, and it kind of seemed like he took a step back against Calgary on the wing. I would have liked to see him play at center, where he was definitely starting to feel more a lot like himself.
I actually agree with that. I think Pettersson looked a lot more engaged at center, played better. I know he got kind of off the schneid in Washington playing on the wing, but I think, yeah, like the games that Horvat was out, I think Pettersson
really stepped
did
it up,
look a
yeah.
lot more like his old self. He had the 7 points in the last five games. I think you're right. I think long-term, I mean, not long-term, I think like get Pettersson back at center,
center yeah.
and, you know, sooner rather than later. I don't know if you guys all agree that. I think I'm with Hus on that one.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, whatever Pettersson has to do to start figuring it out, I think, I don't know exactly the amount of goals he's scored the last couple weeks, but I feel like he's got like 8 or 9 in probably 10, 11 games. So seems like he's starting to come back. And, you know, long term, I think he needs to figure out how to play at center. But, you know, if he needs to play the wing for the next rest of the season to get his groove back, then, you know, I'm fine with that, I guess.
The thing that kind of strikes me about Pettersson, it's just, you know, people, you see this rhetoric on Twitter a lot, that JT Miller is the best skater on the team, you know, and, you know, he's great, and Demko is great, and Quinn Hughes is great, but, I mean, this team really only goes as far as Pettersson is going to take them. You look at the Canucks record when Pettersson scores or gets a point, like, it's real, it's amazing, right? Like, he really impacts the team when he's playing well. So you can say what you will about everyone else, but the team, he's the engine of the team. Like, they're going to go as far as he'll take them, as good as, you know, some of the other guys have been. So if he's not, he needs to find his game one way or another, whether that's at center or on the wing. I mean, actually, not going to say I don't care, but if, like Andy kind of summarized it, if he's playing on the wing and that's where he's going to start scoring some goals, I'm fine with keeping him on the wing. If he's better served at playing center and getting some goals, also fine there. Either way, I just wanted to start seeing that consistent offense that we have been for the last 4 or 5 games from him, and continue that till for a long stretch, you know, until the end of the season, hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think you make a good point there. Is that, you know, the team goes as Pettersson goes, as good as other players have been. But I do think that, you know, like, it is important that we need to get, because like we said, how often we talk about, like, how important is Elias Pettersson to the Canucks? Because, you know, you think, oh, that number one center line is checked. And, you know, if you seriously have doubts about Pettersson being a number one center, you know, better to find those out now than, you know, 3 years from now when you've built a team around a guy and you're like, actually, he's more of a winger. So I do think the Canucks need to know, like, you know, we need to find, like, doesn't matter. We do, you know, trial by fire with Pettersson at this point, right? Like, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But we need to figure out what we have with this guy, because if he's a center, he needs to play at center and he needs to develop his game there. He's a young player. Obviously, he's really, really talented, but, you know, his game's not perfect, like, you know, not many players are, but he's got a few more strides to take, and, you know, those are more, like, finer details of the game that I think he needs to figure out by playing more and more and taking more reps at center. And, I mean, you know, the Canucks are a long shot for the playoffs anyway, so might as well see what you have, and I think that's more important. I don't think Bruce Boudreau is worried about his job security at this point, so I wouldn't see what the downside for him is, and I'm sure he's got the okay from Rutherford on that as well. I mean, yeah, the thing with the Canucks is you got to find a way to start getting the offense going. Like, it's great the Canucks have been good defensively, but like you said, they're a long shot for the playoffs. Like, what are we, like, playing this stingy defensive hockey is not getting you any closer to the playoffs, and it's really hurting the team's offense. So you got to find a way to start unlocking some more offense from, everyone talks about Pettersson, but you need, you know, Besser, Garland,
Horvat
even. Yeah. You know, we need to find some of the big guns consistently scoring, because going into the season, I think everybody said this team should not have that many issues scoring. I think one guy slumping should not cause this much of an effect on the rest of the guys. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? So I think either way, whatever way the season goes, the main objective of the coaching staff should be, let's get some goals. Start scoring.
That's where the lack of offense comes back to. It kind of circles back to the defense anyway. Like, the Canucks' defense, they can't score. I mean, like, Quinn Hughes leads them in points, and then you look outside after that, it's just a complete drop-off. And let's be honest, Quinn Hughes, he has 2 goals this year. He doesn't have a great shot. Like, you know, I love the guy. He's a great, great playmaker. That's fine. You got to do that. But there's no one else on the Canucks. Scores goals, or he even brings assists. Like, that's the thing. Like, Oliver Ekman-Larsson has, like, what, 9 assists this season, or 10?
9 points this whole year.
Like, something, like, extremely low. And, like, that was a guy you were probably banking on in the offseason to be like, you know, even if he's bad, he'll still put up points, right? So, I mean, you can't be like Luke Shen getting 2 points is going to be a consistent thing from the blue line.
Yep. I should mention that Tyler Myers will probably most likely not be facing suspension. Ricky Dollywell reported that earlier today. I just kind of wanted to bring that up. But yeah, I mean, that is a good point as well. Let's get into some Craig talk here. I think we talked about it a lot of last week. That was pretty fun, and I think got the discussion pretty engaged here. So I would want to get back to that, because a new guy's name has been floated in Craig rumors, also from Dollywell and a few other sources. Teams have been calling on Mr. Connor Garland. That has been met with some polarizing responses on both sides by some people. I've seen a lot of people say, you know, yeah, take offers on anyone. I've seen a lot of people as well say, you know, the Canucks would be stupid to even consider trading Connor Garland. I don't really know if I fall in either one of those camps. What are your guys' thoughts on a potential Connor Garland trade? What would the return be looking like for you in an ideal situation? Or are you more in the camp of, you know, the Canucks would be kind of even dumb to think about trading this guy?
To me, I think you have to listen to everybody. Given his contractual status, though, I'd want, like, the same return that you would get from Miller, meaning a lot. I mean, I guess the one thing about Connor Garland, he's played 39 games this year. He has 24 points. So, I mean, he's on pace for roughly 50 points. So it's not a, you know, it's not an overpayment. It's not a steal of a contract. It's kind of the right number. And like I said, if he's got 4 more years after this, like, I need to see a home run. I floated the name Damon Severson and got a lot of pushback, which I don't really understand, because then people are saying, oh, I get Ty Smith. But Ty Smith is another offensively gifted, small, left-handed defenseman. He's basically a worse version of Quinn Hughes. And you have Jack Rathbone. So you want 3 players that are identical on the left side of your defense moving forward? Like, that doesn't make any sense. I don't know what you guys think, but that seems stupid to me.
I mean, I think the reason you got so much pushback on that, Andy, because I saw your tweet, was I think if you're of the... I think a lot of people of the same mind as you, that they should be getting a similar return for Garland that they would be getting for Miller. And I think if you traded JT Miller 1-for-1 for Damon Severson, I don't think a lot of fans would be... from a value wise, would be very happy with that trade.
I also think it's, you see what his age and his contract status.
That's my big thing with that too. I was gonna say, a lot of the people who are saying, you know, Canucks gotta move, you know, Garland or Miller, usually
because the idea, I think, if you're trading a Garland or a Miller, like, the problem with discussing this whole thing is you have to decide what sort of route you're taking. Like, if you're going for the long term, and I mean long term, I mean 4 to 5 years from now, that, do you think the team is gonna start getting good? Then it doesn't really necessarily make sense to acquire a Severson-like player because he's 27 already. Whereas if you think, okay, the team can get good in the next 1 or 2 years, then maybe, yeah, it makes sense. But then I would say, if the team is getting good in 1 to 2 years, does it really make sense to trade Connor Garland? Yes. I don't know. I would say no, but that's sort of what the mind I am of it. I would say take calls on anyone, but I would not necessarily say I'm in a rush to trade Garland. And I also personally feel his value is a little bit low because he's got 2 goals in his last, like, what, 12 games? I think there's more offense to be had with Garland. I don't think he's been at the top of his game. I think he's been fun to watch and he's been pretty decent for the Canucks, but I think there's more to his game that we haven't quite seen yet.
Yeah, I was going to agree with you there in terms of what you were saying about trading for Severson and just, like, you know, what's the plan and where's the window for the Canucks here? Because, like you said, if it is in the next 1 to 2 years, I think Connor Garland's at a very nice cap hit. I think it's going to be a pretty good valuable contract. And when his name came up, I went and did some digging just to find some underlying numbers, just to see what his game is. And most of those models still project him that he's playing at, like, first line player place, or at least a top 6 player. So, I mean, I would not necessarily, I would say I want to move him. I'd say he's one of the few contracts the Canucks have that I would say is good. And, you know, it's got some term on it. You know, it's cost certainty here. So, but like Andy said, I don't think anyone's off the board. And I think for me, it's like, unless you're calling about Pettersson and Hughes, you got to listen to everyone, right? And maybe throw Demko into that camp that, you know, we're not going to listen about trading him. And yeah, that, I mean, that's all I would say about it.
Andy, like you were, you know, mentioning Damon Severson, isn't Severson only have 1 year left on his contract?
Yeah, he's due for an extension, I think.
Yeah, so he has the rest of this year and the next year.
Okay.
A few things though, like, If you're going full rebuild, it's going to take 5 years to get good. You should trade every single player except for Podkolzin and Hoglander, right? Like,
even then, Andy, like, why would you not keep, like, I understand what you're saying, but it's like, based on what I've seen out of Podkolzin and Hoglander, those guys probably aren't going to be, like, cornerstone, you know, franchise building guys. They might just be really, you might just be good, you know? Like, they're not on the Pettersson. They're probably not even on a Horvat level, to be honest with you.
in terms of like their, you know, final upside necessarily. So like, why not just move them too?
Well, exactly, right? And that's why I say that assuming you're trading Garland, you're trying to be good in the next couple of years, I don't mind acquiring Severson because it, two things. Number one, it allows you to get a legitimate top four defenseman on the right side and fill out your top four. Number two, you have Podkolzin and you have Hoglander coming. Now, they're not top-line players, but they're probably second-line guys, and that's what Garland is on this team. He's a second-line guy. If you trade Garland and Miller, you can keep Brock Besser.
Yep, that's
so you're not thing. You're not looking for a 70-point player anyway, so who cares? Fill your D. Like, at some point, you have to trade one of your wingers to address your defense.
Yep.
And if it comes down to Garland or Besser, I'd rather keep Besser.
Well, I think the question comes down, that's like a
that's good,
like
you
that's, that's what we talked about last week. And yeah. I don't really know if I agree with you, Andy, on that. Like, why would you keep Besser over Garland? Like, what's the case for that? What's the case for you for keeping Besser over Garland?
Well, I think number one, Besser, I think, is 2 years younger. Number two, I think he's a better finisher, like a pure goal scorer. I think Besser is one of maybe 20 players in the NHL that can beat a goalie set clean, right? Like, we all love how Garland skates hard and he goes to the net and stuff, but he, like, at a certain point, you need players on your team that can walk down the wing and go pick the corner and score one shot, right? Like, I don't see any other player on the Canucks that can do that, and I'd be very hesitant to trade Besser coming off a down year, which he is, because I think, honestly, if you go to his agent right now and say we'll give you 7 years at $6 million, he probably signs.
Okay, well, I think that might be a little different. I don't, because for me, well, first of all, I'd like to address something. Connor Garland and Brock Besser were in the same draft, so they are the same age, both 25. Besser, the RFA status is the thing for me. It really comes down to what kind of contract you can get, because I don't think I'm with you. I think Brock Besser is a better hockey player than Connor Garland, and I think he has the better upside skills to be a finisher. Connor Garland, you know, like, we got the spins and the edges, but he's not insanely fast. He doesn't have a crazy good shot. He doesn't have really good hands. He's just kind of okay at everything. But I do think Connor Garland can be a consistent 20-goal scorer, you know, 40 to 50-point player. I think Brock Besser has the potential to be a 30-goal scorer, 60, 70-point player. But if that package comes in at 7, because I don't know if Brock Besser would sign a long-term contract at $6 million, I think he'd probably be looking more in the 7 to 7.5 range. And I think that, you know, there's a potential he takes a qualifying offer and he walks and things like that. So it really comes down to is, like, is Besser better at 6.5 or 7? Or is Garland better at just under 5? Because I could still get a haul for Besser. And the second thing about that is that the Canucks don't have a fast top 6. And Besser is a slow player. And I don't necessarily think that, I think Garland has a little more speed and you know, shiftiness to his game. And I think Besser's lack of foot speed has sometimes at times, you know, made him look not super great all the time. So I wouldn't necessarily be writing off that, oh yes, I want to keep Besser over Garland, even though I think he might be the more talented hockey player, if you can kind of see where I'm coming at it from.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. I mean, it all depends on the contract, right? Like, we always talk about maximizing the value of the players you get on the contract, right? I mean, if Besser wants 7.5, it's not even a question to keep Garland.
Yep.
Right? But if Besser signs at 6, now I think it's a conversation.
I think if Besser signs at 6, then I would move Garland for sure, because it's like, would I rather have, you know, it's, can it's I have Besser at 6 then, plus, you know, maybe a Severson or a defenseman or whatever? Or would I rather have Garland and, you know, something else, depending on what I got for Besser, right? And then it comes down to cap hits and things like that. But I think that there is a market for that in terms of, you know, you might be able to really address a huge need on your team.
The problem I see with trading Garland, I see where you guys are going with this. Like, so, okay, let's assume in a world where we get, like, the Canucks are able to sign Besser for long-term at a lower cap hit than his qualifying offer because he's having a down year. Okay, let's just assume that. So now you're like, okay, Lord, hey, let's see what we can get for Garland. The problem with Garland is you have cost certainty on a decently long contract, and you're trying to get a defenseman. So there's no, I don't see a team creating you a defenseman for a winger with term left on a good contract, if you get what I'm saying, like in that mid-20s age. Like, teams don't usually create those kinds of players. So anybody you bring in, you're going to have to either, they're either going to be an expiring contract, or you're going to have to give them, or they're going to be a restricted free agent, and you're going to have to give them a contract when they come in. And I don't know about you guys, but I've sort of lost the appetite to trade for restricted free agents and then have to sign them to contracts before they play the game for the Canucks. So that's sort of where my mind is on the Garland front.
Okay, how about this? This was floated to me a few days or a few times yesterday, too. What if you trade Garland and Tucker Kuhlman and you get, like, say, a second round pick?
See, that's my, that's still not enough for me.
I don't know.
That's not enough for me either.
That's a cap. That is a lot of that is a lot of cap relief, though.
I like the idea, but I don't know. Is a second round pick really that much?
You got to consider the cap flexibility that you're also gaining because you're dumping 2.8 from and 4.9 for Garland. Sure, so but the, it's nearly $7 million. $7 million almost.
Sure, but that cap's only helpful if you sign someone good with it, right? Like, why don't you just sign another Tucker Pool?
Having cap flexibility is huge, though. Even if you don't necessarily use all of it, because then you can leverage cap space to do other things, but. You know, the name of the show, Cap Space Wins Cubs. But, yeah, I mean, I get, I like the line of thinking, Andy, but I don't know if that specific offer would be something that I would have the appetite to go with. It's hard because I think inherently, if you're trading Garland, you just have to come to terms with the fact that you will not extract the same value for Garland that you would if he stayed on your team. A guy who's going to, you know, score 40 to 50 points, maybe 60 points, locked up at a reasonable number, who's only 25, prime of his career, can provide a lot of value to your team. He might get you a good asset, maybe get you a first-round draft pick and a prospect or something if you're able to pull that kind of offer. But just given the contract status and the way the modern NHL is, like, you just have to come to terms with the fact you're not going to get an insane haul for Connor Garland, although you might have to do that. It might, you know, your hands might be tied because you want to get competitive quicker and you might not have that many options. Like, yeah, I think you have to kind of accept that.
Well, I think that's
absolutely. And that's why I'd be very hesitant to move Garland, right? Because of everything you said. Like, he's one of those players where you look at cup winners and you say, wow, that guy got 59 points for them and only made $4 million. Mm-hmm. What a good contract that was, right? You need those players. Yeah. So I'd be very hesitant to move him. But if I were to move him, that's kind of the thinking I would have in doing so.
Well, my main reason for wanting to keep Connor Garland, and, you know, I'm not saying, like, you know, trade Besser over Garland for sure, like, end of discussion. I think you see it both ways for sure. I think at this moment in time, I'm probably slightly more, if we had to move on them, it's probably Brock Besser. But I think a lot of that comes down, you do an internal evaluation, you really decide, you know, how much of a step can Hoglander and Pod Colson both really take? Because if they can, and they're going to become, you know, like, maybe, you know, middle six guys, you know, can be on your second line.
Why not move them?
You get them, but why don't you get them on, like, very reasonable contracts? You know, like, we're talking, like, four, maybe even under that. And then they're playing at, like, top six level. You keep Connor Garland, who's also on a great contract. That really means the only player that you're paying big money for is Pettersson on your first line. Miller's probably gone in this scenario anyway. And then Bo Horvat, because I bet you would extend him with the amount of money you moved out with Besser and Miller.
Okay, I got one thing to say, and then I want to say mention something about you said, Hayes. As far as Garland goes, I would say I wouldn't be in a rush to trade him, but I think if the perfect situation kind of arises to trade him, just given his contract status, it would be hard to stomach me trading him. Just looking at it right now, I would rather trade Besser. That's just where I'm at. But I can see why, like, if a good situation came up, I wouldn't be opposed to necessarily trading him or using him as a way to dump another bad contract. Jesus mentioned something about Hoglander and Pod Colson. I know a lot of fans say these guys are untouchables or we wouldn't want to trade them just because they're on ELCs. And this is more so with Hoglander, I think, than Pod Colson, because I've got my own thoughts on Pod Colson. But Hoglander is one of those guys that you watch him play and you're like, yeah, he does a lot of good stuff on the ice. He's not the best defensive player, but he does a lot of good stuff offensively. But there hasn't been much of a bottom line with him. I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to attaching a Hoglander or a Pod Colson to a bad contract on the Canucks to ship them out the door. I don't know if that is something. Like, I know people hear that and they're like, no, you can't get rid of a guy on an ELC. But the ELC value really comes from guys who are performing at, like, first-line superstar levels. And really, Pod Colson and Hoglander aren't even close to providing you even top-six value. Like, Hoglander maybe gives you marginal top-six value. Pod Colson has pretty much been in the bottom six the entire season based on ice time, so I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to moving one of them. They would have pretty high value around the league because they're so young and they're cheap. If you attach one of them to an OEL contract, does that wet the palate for a team to take that on? I don't know, but, you know, something I would explore. I've never really thought about this before, but I'm kind of getting my mind there now because, like, if you really think the Canucks are going to be good in 2 years,
Are Parkholz and Hoglander going to be good enough contributors on your team? Are they going to be better or at least comparable to Besser or Garland? It's really hard to say because you never know how much a player steps
in. Like,
take.
Parkholz is like halfway through his rookie year. Like, but it's so hard to put a label on
it's
that.
It's the devil
right?
you know versus the devil you don't, though, right? And if Garland and Besser get in on good deals, like, I would, like, if your first two right wingers are Brock Besser and Connor Garland, I'd be like, you know, you're looking in good shape there if that's the first and second line right wingers.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't know. I think Hoglander, I think a lot of people's thing for about him goes back to how good his rookie season was last year. And I think he blew a lot of people away. He blew me away with how good he was. He was probably one of the Canucks' best forwards.
Okay.
Right?
Hold on, hold on, hold on. 1 second. So this is how we're kind of I'm at here on this, okay? Like, this is what I would say. Here's how I kind of internally divide the Canucks' division of assets, the players that they have on the roster currently. Okay? I'd say there's players who provided a contract value or better. And then these are the players I put in that category. Hughes, Demko, Miller, Horvat, Garland, Pettersson, Hoglander, Parkholzen. You have the middle class of the team that are kind of like okay-ish players but make too much money, but they're not like insane cap hits. Pearson, Dickinson, Hamonic, Pullman. And then I've got your anchors as Myers and Pullman.
Or OEL.
Oh, no, OEL.
Sorry,
yeah, you mean.
Myers and OEL. Mm-hmm. Okay, like they're probably unmovable contracts. So given this situation, when I go to the players who provide their contract value better, all the guys I said, generally I'd be like, you know, if I'm just a coach, I'd be like, I'd want to keep all of those players. Like they're good, they're helpful. I think if the Canucks need to take a step forward, you have to come to terms with pick two of the guys I said in that list and move them for addressing your defense, dumping bad money, etc. Because you need to find a way out of the other bad contracts in your team. I think some of the contracts are more palatable than others, but I think some of them need sweeteners, and I think you need to figure out what you can do with that. Because in an ideal world, I would just cut Myers, Ekman, Larson, Pearson, Dickinson, Hamonic, Pullman. Just keep the rest of the stuff, sign some stuff in free agency and figure it out. Ideally, and then maybe trade Miller for a right-hand defenseman.
So most of it just comes down to gutting out the Canucks' middle class of players.
That would be the thinking like for that, me generally. So how would, based on that, do you guys agree that of the players I said, you have to trade two of the guys that you want to keep? Would that be generally true, would you guys think? Or two of those players probably have to go?
I would say generally, but like it would have to depend still, right? Because like, one of the two you trade are like Podkolzin and Hoglander. Then obviously you can't do anything still, right?
Not
like,
necessarily.
The cap relief isn't there. Unless they're attached to one of the people that you mentioned in the middle class or, you know,
I kind of want to get Eddie's thoughts on this for a sec, because I think we kind of dumped a lot of stuff here. I wanted to see what he's got to say.
Well, I think, first of all, I don't agree with half of what you just said about the player contracts.
Okay.
Pettersson has not provided anywhere near good contract value. Like, I know what you're saying. In the future, I hope he will. But this year, he's been arguably the worst player on the team for his contract value. Like, he's the highest paid forward on the team and, what, like, seventh in scoring?
Okay, well, I just kind of lumped him in there for like the sake of, you know, he's a guy you wouldn't necessarily want to move.
Sure, for sure. No, I know what you're saying. Dickinson is also one of the worst contracts on the team. This is exactly what I was afraid of.
Well, he isn't. I would say all the players I said the middle class are terrible contracts, but I was just saying the raw cap hit on his number isn't so insane that another team wouldn't be able to find a way to fit that in. You know what I mean? Like, if you look at a Myers, like, how are we going to fit $6 million under a cap? Dickinson at $2.5 million, you might be able to squeeze a team. Like, he would be able to fit in a cap. It's not, like, it's so erroneous, although his production is terrible for his contract.
I understand, okay. Yeah, I mean, like, to me, the two contracts you really need to move, realistically, like, I don't think anybody's touching OEL, so I won't even mention him. The two contracts I think you need to move is Dickinson and Pearson.
Yeah, I agree.
Pullman's a bad player, but if the Canucks are just going to simply flip the puck out to center ice every time like they've been doing the last month and a half, Pullman can do that. Most players in the major junior hockey league can flip the puck off the glass to center ice, right? So he's in your lineup every game at 2.5. It's not great, but it's okay. Dickinson he can't play center, first of all. He can't win a face-off. He's not killing penalties, and he's a fourth-line winger. You can find a Dickinson for $850,000 in free agency.
He's Matt Highmore,
yeah,
basically.
You have one right now.
Yeah, exactly. And then Pearson, like, I don't know. I've never understood this obsession with Pearson that some people have. Like, he's not fast. He doesn't have a great shot. Yeah, he's decent on, the, you know, getting pucks off the boards and chipping them out to center ice, but like, he's not providing value now. He's only going to get older and slower. Like, you have to get out of that deal while you can still Like, I honestly think you could trade Pearson to another team this offseason and not have to retain any salary.
I agree with that. I agree. Best player to fleece on
I
that.
Bet you could get a second-round pick for Tanner Pearson, one for one.
No way.
I think you could.
No.
Top contenders. No,
no. I bet you're betting, like, a mid-round draft pick, like a 4 to 5, like 4 to 6 range. Somebody might give that to you because they want to add some experience on their third line and they have a little cap space.
Okay, Tanner Pearson, he's got 7 goals, 18 points in 41 games, okay? I didn't actually...
So near half a point.
I didn't have a point a game, right? So was that, like, again, 40 points in a season, right? He's on pace for that. He's a little overpaid. But you're telling me an old hockey GM wouldn't look at this guy, half a point a game guy, Stanley Cup champion, former first-round pick, and it's not like, oh, we need this guy for our cup run. There's teams that do that every year.
You know the team that'd be really interested, I think, in Pearson is Edmonton Oilers.
That's exactly the kind of the Edmonton Oilers like $4 million.
That's like a big Edmonton move. Big Edmonton energy.
No, but the thing is, they have such a lack of wingers who can actually play. Like Pearson is like okay. I would not describe Pearson as good, but I would not describe him as bad as Dickinson. Like where he's like he doesn't do anything.
You're right.
Like at this point in his career, I would say Pearson can still play in your middle six. Like I would say he's probably a third liner, but he can step into your second line in a pinch if you really needed him to, which he's been doing for the Canucks
for 4 years.
But I would say he's not that bad in terms of like, oh, this guy can't play in the NHL anymore. You know what I mean?
I would classify
like how there's some other guys on the Canucks who I would say these guys don't belong in the NHL like anymore.
Jason Dickinson.
Like things like that.
He's 2 goals in 25 games.
5 points
in like you know what I mean, right? So I would say Pearson, you still could convince, like a team might still want to be like, yeah, we still want to add like a Pearson-like player. And then, you know, the cap hit's not great, but like Andy said, I think there's a team out there that might want to get him and you wouldn't need to retain any salary to dump that contract. So, okay, that gets you out of Pearson's contract, let's say. Can we get back to the Höglander, Craig Höglander or Pod Colson?
Yeah,
is that
sure.
Anything anyone has an appetite for? I'm kind of getting in. I'm kind of talking myself into it.
You made a good point.
Andy, what do you think? I want to get Andy's thoughts on it.
I mean, the only way I'd be willing to trade one of them is if you can get out of Oliver Ekman-Larsson's contract. To be honest.
Can like, you? Do you think that's enough to get
no.
out of?
No.
Right?
I got a question.
No,
would you do Pod Colson to get out of Myers?
No.
No, absolutely not.
You have to keep Myers at this point? No. I feel like, you know what? You could trade Myers without having to add a sweetener if you just retained salary. Like, if you waited for one more season and retained salary and had 1 year left, I think you could do that as well. Teams love right-handed defensemen.
Yeah.
And 6'9" people.
Here's the thing with Myers, too, right, is that he has this year and two more. So I think if you trade him, like, not this summer, but the summer when he only has 1 year left, you can get an actual asset back.
Yeah, that's what I agree.
Yeah, also,
I don't think there's any team in the league that would take Oliver Ekman-Larsson without, like, the Canucks retaining a huge chunk of salary.
It'd be like
and 80%. I think Ekman-Larsson is the thing that's really holding this team back. I feel like the only hope with Ekman-Larsson at this point is either that he retires and the contract ends or he goes on LTIR, right? Like,
I mean,
how else are you going to trade this thing?
I mean, I would just wait for Jim Benning to get hired by another team and then credit him with that team.
Give us your 10th overall draft pick for Ekman-Larsson.
I always say that, like, a team could probably win the Stanley Cup with one bad contract, but, like, I genuinely do not think you can win the Stanley Cup with your one bad contract being Oliver Ekman-Larsson.
Oh, there's no way you can afford playing, like, a 4-5 defenseman in nearly $8 million a year?
Unless you're literally, like, had
I mean, Colorado pays Eric Johnson $6
million. Okay.
They're out of that contract this year. He's actually been pretty helpful.
Yeah. At least he's been good. Why doesn't he have, like, unless there's, like, a home run pick on, like, someone on defense who's making, like, $2 million and is playing, like, top 4 minutes.
Which... No, like, better than that. You cannot sign, like, a legitimate number two defenseman for fair value if you have Ekman-Larsson on the team. You just won't be able to afford it. So you're going to find a guy who's, like, a
ELC.
Stud number two playing, like, making, like, $2.5 million.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Like, or a Mackenzie Weegar type.
Yeah, exactly.
Or, like Devon Taves, bro.
Or something like that.
You know, something, yeah. Or, you know, obviously a great prospect from Abbotsford that Trent Kell's definitely developed for us.
Again, like Andy said, I think... Did Andy just hang up? I feel like I heard someone hang up.
No, he's there.
I think... I know Andy said Pearson would be the guy you really got to get rid of. I think... I know Andy's like, oh, Pullman, I could live with... I cannot live with 4 years of, like, three more seasons after this one. Tucker Pullman, Andy, like, Pullman is, like, as bad as Eric Gudbranson, man. And the term on that contract, like, that is awful, awful. Like, I can't... The puck is a grenade on the guy's stick, man. Like, I do not think Tucker Pullman can play in the NHL. And I really would want to get rid of him. I think it'd be... for me, it would be Dickinson and Pullman are the two guys that I have to get out of.
Yeah, I mean, in no ways am I saying Pullman's a good player. He can't make a pass. But if he's on your third pair and just chips the puck out to center ice and plays 15 minutes a game, like, that's, you know, it's an overpayment, but at least it's useful.
I guess.
No, but I would argue that. I would argue
zero
that.
Zero use for Dickinson.
Yeah.
Zero.
Yeah, no, Dickinson has zero. No. He's probably, of the players I said on all entire list I went through, he's probably the only player who has, like, no skill set. Like, he provides nothing.
I think you could still trade Dickinson, to be honest with you.
I think you could,
really,
too.
I think he's only 1 year removed. Like, this is the first bad season he's really had. He's been pretty good in Dallas. He had pretty high, rave reviews while he was in Dallas. Dallas wouldn't have traded him because they weren't for the expansion. I think you can talk a GM into thinking that it was just a bad fit in Vancouver and that he can still be a helpful player.
Yeah, he actually had 22 points and then 21 in the 2 years in Dallas, and then the shortened season in 50 games, he had 15 points. So, like, his point totals have not been as, like,
at 2.5 for a guy like this, man. If he gets you 30 points, 2.5 is not that crazy to be paying him. If he can play,
he never got,
like,
30.
He can play center. I think the biggest problem,
but 22 and 50.
The biggest thing
that was a one-time outlier. What are you doing?
The biggest thing that's holding him back is that he can't actually play center.
You have
to convince
the team.
The thing
is, he can play center. He just can't take a face-off.
What a sentence.
No, but, like, that's, like, a small part of playing center. Like,
no, I agree it is. But, like, if you go over 12 every night in the draw, then it's kind of
a problem. I agree. It's not, you can't be that bad. If you're, like, 35%, I was like, okay, fine.
You're still pushing it.
You're pushing it on the bottom end.
If you're
something
in the 40s, I'll live with it. That's what I always say about Pettersson. I said if Pettersson can get his face-off percentage like 45, like, you're almost breaking even, buddy. Like, it's fine. I'll take that.
I don't need everyone to be like a 70% face-off man, but I need you to be like at least 40, 45 to live with. But, like, I agree. Yeah. Dickinson had how many 3 for 12 nights did he have? Like,
yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Like, do you not practice face-offs? How do you play center before?
His face-off percentage on his stats this year, it's actually 44%. So technically, I should eat my words on this.
44 for Dickinson? That's insanely high? I don't even believe that?
I don't know. He's kind of been going on a heater recently. I've been tallying them up while I've watched the Flames and Canucks play.
44%? I would have guessed that.
I would have guessed like 35.
Yeah.
I would too. I would have guessed something like even worse than that.
But I had another question for you guys about contracts and all this. We're talking about Horvat. Is that another guy? He's in the same term length as Miller.
I'm going to get flamed for my ideas about Horvat.
Sat reported that Horvat's camp does want an extension in Vancouver and doesn't necessarily think that cap hit is coming in as high as some people think. Do we want to sign Horvat back? Yes or no?
I would say yes.
I do too. But that's only... I'm only saying
No, just yes or no. Do you want Horvat?
If the window's in like
do you want to
2 to 3 years,
I'm just asking a question. Do you want to extend Horvat?
Yeah, okay, fine. Yes. Yes, I do.
Andy?
Andy's going to say no.
Would say yes.
Oh. Okay, you would say yes. What do you want to sign Horvat to? What are we looking at? What is a contract that you think?
What I want? Because what I would want is like...
$1 million for 8 years.
Exactly. No. I'm being realistic with like market value and things like that. I'd look at about a $6 million cap hit for 8 years.
I would do that too.
Yeah? I would say that's
more... I'm more comfortable with 6x6.
Okay, again, yes, like ideally that. I would go with that, but I think that Horvat's camp would look at Ryan Nugent-Hopkins' contract, be like, we're the same guy, this is what he signed for,
awesome.
And you have to give Horvat the 8 years in order to kind of keep the cap hit in down. That six number, because I think he would ask for more. I think a player like Horvat would get more in the open market, especially if you went at a six-year term. I think if you get Horvat at a six-year term, you're looking at 7+.
He's also your captain.
Yeah.
He's also your captain, which has an inherent value to him.
Like,
as well.
I know people.
I think that's fair. I think, like, if. Plus, like, Horvat had all the other stuff that you would get paid for in your first free agency. You know, two way. I'm putting air quotes on that. Two way player. Graded face offs. Captain, penalty kill, power play.
Playoff performer.
You know, playoff performer. Like, the kind of intangible shit that you can't really put a value on. I think lump that all in. He's a 50, you know, 20 goal scorer, 25 goal scorer, 50 to 60 point player. I think that kind of guy gets. At least $7 million in a six-year contract.
And his age as well.
And his age,
would be comfortable playing him up to like 6.5 too. Like, honestly.
Not on an eight-year contract.
If it's under
if
seven.
If it's an eight-year contract, I think there's no way. You think it's worth it to give him the eight-year, because the eight-year just to bring the cap head down to keep him around?
Well, depends how low I can get it.
So, like, let's say you did the 8x6, is that, or 8 years?
That would be like the maximum I could go. Would you be happy with a contract if Bo Horvat signed?
I could live with it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't mind it. I could say I would live with it.
I wouldn't say I love it. No,
I won't say I love it, but I wouldn't.
So I mean, like, do you think the Canucks should go that route, or should they explore trading Horvat as well?
I think,
because I mean, like, I'm to be honest with you, I don't think the Canucks are gonna find a better second line center than Bo Horvat.
They're not. There's nothing.
Unless you keep JT Miller, then you'd be like, okay, he's playing second line center.
I have,
right, but then it's like the same thing, right? Like, what are we doing here?
Andy, would you do the Horvat contract at 6x8?
6x8. I mean, yeah, I'd probably do it. I think you know the last couple of years, he's going to be not worth it.
But you're hoping the salary cap goes up by player, then.
Oh, exactly. You hope it goes up. And Horvat's the type of player where he could still make himself useful, even though he's overpaid, right? Like, I look at, you know, a player like Jason Dickinson. He doesn't bring any value to the team. You know, like, at least with Horvat, is he going to score? You know, he's going to win faceoffs. You know, he's going to, you know, take a matchup role. Like, he could at least provide some value to your team, even though he will be overpaid.
Yep.
I was going to say.
And that's the thing. I would put you in, like, the you could live with it camp, even though you wouldn't really say, like, it's like the ideal situation, but you would be like, I'm not super unhappy with it.
I have two quick things about Bo Horvat. Just one, I think. Just when you look at, like, his overall development, like, starting from the beginning, once he got drafted and came to Vancouver, and just, like, when he started really taking his steps and getting better into a second-line center, if you compare, like, his kind of timeline to a lot of other players who have similar timelines, most of those guys don't fall off right at 30. They usually end up being pretty okay till, you know, maybe 32, 33, and that would only leave you with, I think, if I'm doing my math correctly, about two seasons where you would say Bo Horvat's probably bad.
Yeah.
If he signed that 8-year deal. And then the second thing is, you know, people probably gonna flame me for this online, but, like, this is not a video game. Like, you can't just, like, make a guy your captain for 2 years and then ship him out the door just because you feel like it. Like, he's been a great representation, I think, for the Canucks, especially, like, recently with all the COVID stuff. You know, get your vaccine. He was at the front of the Black Lives Matter thing earlier in the bubble. Like, he does well representing the team. He definitely keeps the culture, I think. He's made, like, a good culture in the locker room. And I mean, like, I know I'm not in the locker room. I'm not, like, saying this firsthand, but that just stuff that also matters. And you can't just, like, hassle your captain and be like, you know, if you don't sign for, like, $500,000 less, like, I'm going to trade you. Like, it wouldn't sit well with players. It won't sit well with agents.
I think I agree with you on that. I think culture is, I don't think culture is, like, an overrated aspect in sports. I mean, it is overrated.
When you do Jay Beagle.
But yeah, but I think Horvat is the kind of guy who actually is a culture carrier and part of the fabric of being, like, in the room. And I don't think it's smart to just, you know, like, you can't just, like, create everyone on your team every 2 years and just keep expecting to win. You know, you do need to have a core of players to kind of start building around. And I think Horvat is a player that I would want to keep in that area.
I mean, I know
it's kind of like an antiquated thing and not necessarily like a valid something you can put a number on. But I do think that it's stupid to just, like, ship guys out of town every 5 minutes.
We saw the effect, like, what happened, too. You know, when Tanev and Markstrom and, you know, Toffoli, Stetcher, all these guys walked, like, you know, say what you will. Say if you thought Tanev was overpaid or Markstrom was overpaid. But it definitely affected the team. So, I mean, I'm not saying overpay for the guy just because he's a culture carrier, but it's something that you have to take into account, and I would say it's a reason why you shouldn't just trade Bo Horvat, regardless of his age or the number.
Ace, you want to make another point about Horvat before we kind of jumped in on this?
No.
I'm good. You're not going to trade Horvat then? I mean, I've seen people say we should trade Horvat, which I was like, no, we shouldn't, because I'm sort of of the mind that I said, like, where are they going to get a better second-line center than Horvat? Or even a replacement? Like, who is going to replace him if you trade him?
Like,
you're not gonna trade for his replacement.
Yeah,
right. No, like, you know what I mean.
No one's gonna hand you a younger version of him.
Yeah, you get what I'm saying, right?
Like you said, the only real feasible way I see it is that, you know, JT Miller becomes the second line center of the team.
Like, that's the only real way I would see. But I was like, yeah, obviously, if you're trading Horvat, you're trading Miller.
Or it's like if you traded Miller and you got an absolute haul and, like, one of those pieces in there.
Like, if you traded all, like, this is just a very hype. Like, if you traded JT Miller to Colorado and Alex Newhook came back the other way. Then it's like, okay, he could play second line center, eventually. Yeah.
But then the whole thing with trading Miller was that you need a defenseman. So, like, I don't even think the Canucks would go that route, if that makes sense. Like, I feel like the best thing the Canucks are getting back from Miller is going to be a D-man.
Yeah.
I think the other thing with Horvat, too, is that, you know, as much as Hughes and Pettersson are the face of the franchise, like, they're not the ones in the Chinese New Year commercials. They're not the ones speaking at Diwali Night. They're not the ones talking the Black Lives Matter protests, right? Like, yeah. Horvat's a guy that, you know, you can send to the media. He's not going to fuck anything up. He's not going to be involved in some controversial, you know, stance. Like I look at a player like JT Miller.
Yes.
You know, I think the signs are there that he's probably a pretty stout Republican and supported the former president of the United States. You know, rumors are he's not really the best with masks or vaccines. Like, is that somebody you want speaking to the media in this type of market 50 times a year?
Yeah.
Probably not. Definitely, you know, like, not. At least with Horvat, you know, he's not going to go out there and say, like, you know, fuck the government, they're fucking us around. You know what I mean? Like, as much as you don't want to pay for that in a salary cap world, like, that kind of stuff does matter.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think Horvat really believes the stuff he's saying. Like, you know, when Don Cherry said a thing about, you know, the immigrants and all that stuff, and, like, Horvat, you know, kind of unprompted, you know, said that, like, you know, that's not a place for anything in our game. And I think he understands, you know, Vancouver is, like, a diverse place. You know, there's, like, a lot of, you know, immigrants, you know, like, you know, brown and, you know, Asian fans and South Asian fans and things like that in the city. And I think he kind of realizes that, and I think he really...
He enjoys it.
I think he understands and appreciates the market. Kind of in that way, so I do think he would be like a good representation. Yes, I think he would fly off the handle in media.
Because he learned from the Sedins, guys. It's because he learned from the Sedins.
There's probably something
there. There's some of it's from that. I'm down to it. You gotta admit it.
See, what Bo wasn't Swedish. The Sedins would have really loved him then.
Oh, they would. They would definitely love him if he was Swedish, though. Edler probably would have stayed if he was Swedish.
We got about 10 minutes left here. Do we have anything else to Canucks stuff to discuss, or do you want to talk about football? Anyone else want to jump in on a... Oh, I did want to get this. What? Because I wanted to tweet this. Because I know Faber and Quads, those are terrible trade proposals, man. But they're trade proposals for JT Miller.
Oh, those are both offers. I would have kept them at that point.
And those were their offers. And, you know, they kind of got flamed online, I think, for their takes. And everybody said there was too little. So I wanted to do a poll question from our account and see what we could get the best Miller offers for. So what will your guys' JT Miller offers be? If you were making a trade, who's you can put down, you wouldn't trade him? Because I know that's heart, that's what you feel. I've given this some thought, if you guys want to go.
I have
one. I have a massive package, though.
Oh, my God, I know his. I know his.
Oh, you should probably clip that. I have a massive package.
Play it later. Next week.
That's what she said. I'll go first. Okay. I would target New York. This is a pretty basic one. I would try to get into New York for Braden Schneider, first round draft pick, and then some kind of middle prospect or roster player off their team.
I have mine. I don't think
that's kind of what I'm looking for.
I'm not sure the money works in mine, but I'll go to Minnesota. I want Addison, Kevin Fiala, and then a first round pick or Matt Boldy. One to two.
I don't know if you're getting all that.
I don't think you could. But I don't know. Minnesota's a good team.
You're not getting Boldy for sure.
Yeah, Minnesota's a good team.
If you do Addison and Fiala, I think that might be all you'd get for that.
Okay, what happens if I tell you this? JT Miller.
Fiala's contract status won't really make sense for a Miller trade, won't you think?
50% retained.
To Minnesota?
Yeah, for Addison, Boldy, and then take Fiala back. I think you have to take something off the team for the money to work.
I want Draisaitl and McDavid, so that's my proposal.
I got two different ones. I got a couple interesting ones here, right? I think I sent one of you guys this one. I would do Besser and Miller to Minnesota in exchange for Fiala, Boldy, Addison, and two first-round draft picks.
Straight out of the NBA.
You guys think that's too much? Am I going too crazy there?
I don't think that's too crazy. I think in terms of value, it's probably fair, but just the NHL is not a sport.
Saying all this Minnesota talk, just made me real. Minnesota, I don't know what Minnesota fans are like. Are on. Like, they're on some kind of weird, like, acid trip, like, group acid trip, where they think they've got years to, like, be competitive. Like, they understand, like, the buyout penalty for the Parise and Suter contracts are going to completely fuck their team, right? Like, they're fucked in the next 2 years.
I thought Minnesota.
I
don't think they get it, man. Like, there's like, they're $14 million and $9 million. It's crazy or something. Like, it's a crazy.
The numbers are
it's
crazy.
It's a crazy amount of dead cap. Bill Guerin really just fucked up the Minnesota Wild. Was like, peace.
I know.
He's just like, you have to go for it within the next 2 years if you're them. So, like, if I was the GM of the Wild, I would do that trade because I'm like, we're fucked anyways if we don't win the Stanley Cup in the next 2 years. Right? Otherwise, I'm fucked for the next fucking eight because I have no money. I mean, yeah, but I mean, like, the only guy I really would see if I'm a Minnesota fan that I really wouldn't want to give up is Marco Rossi because I think he is, like, first line center, potential upside in the NHL.
Yeah.
Like, superstar written all over him, right? The rest of the stuff is good, but I'd be like, you know what? Fuck it. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, like I said, I think the value's there, but just the NHL is not the kind of sport where, you know, that happens too often.
I agree.
But I'd say it's
fair. I wouldn't even say no to that.
Like,
value-wise, I would say it's pretty fair. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's very close.
I mean, I've seen, like, other teams' Twitters, and they're kind of going off. They're like, you know, we're, like...
Asking for too much.
I feel like that's a kind of a stupid place to start, though, because fans get, like, infatuated with their crap prospects, and they're like, you know, we're not going to trade anything,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, DiPietro's worth Connor McDavid, boys.
Like, you know, Ace was talking to some Rangers fan who was basically saying that, like, you wouldn't, like, Lundqvist, Schneider, and Keandre Miller would be, like, his untouchables in a JT Miller trade, and then Ace was like, oh, fuck that, like, no one would trade, like, we'll just trade with another team, like...
What are we even getting
like, what are you even getting back at that point, right? Like, his offer was crashed off at first, like, okay...
A guy you've openly said you don't want on your team anymore and a first-round pick from a team that's going to make the playoffs?
Yeah, the Kick Rocks, right?
Yeah.
I saw a wild fan say Greenway in a second for JT Miller. That was pretty bad. Sorry. I
wouldn't hate getting Jordan Greenway back in a minute.
I wouldn't either. But that might be better than Kevin Fiala.
I was doing Fiala. Okay, because my thought on that Besser-Miller trade is Besser and Fiala are both RFAs this coming season. I think you could sign Fiala to a more reasonable contract than you could Brock Besser. And I think Fiala still has a high enough skill set that he would be like a first-line player. And he's a much more mobile player than Brock Besser, although he doesn't have a shot. And then obviously the other stuff is all futures and stuff that can really help the team move going forward. So that's kind of where my head's in on it. I think another underrated destination for JT Miller would be Colorado. Mm-hmm. Kadri was probably going to walk in UFA this year. The cap situation is not looking super great for Colorado after all the contracts and the money that they've been handing out. You probably can't re-sign Kadri after the insane year he's been on, and then you could get Miller for this year with Kadri, which your team would be completely stacked, and then you still have Miller to stay a second line center the year after. Would you guys look at a Bowen Byram centerpiece for JT Miller?
I know, just because of the absolutely like his not. Health issues there with the concussion problems.
If there's one prospect I want no part of, it's Bowen Byram. Mm. Simply because like, listen, if he could stay healthy, I think he has a chance to be like a Quinn Hughes type player, like a super elite player. But he's on the record of saying he's contemplated retirement already because of concussions. He's had three in the last 12 months. He's already taken one leave of absence from Colorado this year, and now he's on his second. Like, to me, he is damaged goods. I want no part of him.
A lot of red flags there
Goods, yes. But if he was healthy, he'd probably be, like, completely untouchable in Colorado. Like, the reason that he's available is because of a...
Exactly.
But
exactly.
Then I'm not necessarily... But then I'm not necessarily going to trade JT Miller to get him, right?
It might be worth the gamble, because what if he turns out and you have two Quinn Hughes back?
But then you dumped your best player for a guy who's retired.
Not there, yeah.
Right? Like...
This also makes it sound very insensitive. I feel so bad for the kid.
Oh,
he's
no,
such a great player.
Don't
such
make
a
it
great
feel
player.
Like,
No.
I don't. I'm not trying to be like insensitive.
No,
like,
neither
I feel,
am I.
Like, I think he had such a bright future,
player,
and
yeah.
I really hope he turns his career, like,
especially
is able to get
local,
back playing.
Especially
and,
being
yeah,
local, it was awesome.
I really hope he gets back to playing and is able to, like, continue his career, and I don't want him to retire.
Yeah, yeah. No,
but as a team and a business, I would not.
You'd have to look at that.
That's
a concerning factor. I agree. Yeah.
The problem I have with moving Miller for Byram is that you have other pieces that aren't, if they hit their potential, aren't as good as Byram, but they're more of a sure thing to turn out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, would you be looking like a new hook then the other way?
I think in terms of value, I like that, but like that just the positional need is just not there. Like, I think if we're trading
exactly.
JT Miller, it's got to be for a D-man, right? And we all pretty much mutually agree that Bull Horvat's going
to
stay, right?
Yeah.
So like.
Like, I really like the Rangers, and I would ask for Braden Schneider. I'd ask for Brennan Othman, who was their first-round pick this year,
that
play center.
Tough.
And I would want Vitaly Kravtsov, too.
Okay, yeah. Anyone
that's a steep ask, Andy. I don't know if they would move Othman. Like, he's leading the OHL in goals right now. They're, like, quite high on him.
I saw another one.
That's a good offer, though.
That's
a good offer. I would take that and run if they gave that to you, but...
Yeah. I saw another Canucks fan put out very similar deal, but instead it was Schneider and then Kakko and Kravtsov for Miller.
I don't see them moving Kakko or
Laf. Like, Kakko's also been very bad with the Rangers, and like his ice time keeps going down anyway. Like,
They're not trading a second or first overall draft pick.
Yeah.
Like 2 or 3 years into their career.
Yeah, but then here was the other thing. Someone's like, oh, I would just do it for Kakko or Lafreniere. And I was like, I'm not sure if I would do that for JT Miller.
Yeah, Faber said that it was his trade offer was
like Harmon's, actually, yeah.
I think maybe Lafreniere I would, but for Kapo Kako, I would not.
Like, would you guys do Miller for Lafreniere 1-for-1? I probably wouldn't. No.
I probably wouldn't either. But well, I feel like I have more time for that one than I do for Kako.
At least I can see the value from that, because I think Lafreniere has superstar potential in him as well, and he's a left winger and stuff, but like it doesn't, again, positional need
positional
is too
need,
much
yeah.
is too big of a factor in this trade for me. Yep, I agree. Yeah. Anyone got anything else to say before we get to our Super Bowl picks?
Nope.
All right. Well, let's get to our Super Bowl picks. Like I mentioned, it was a great day of football. The Bengals. Hussein, you can take a victory lap on your boy Joey B here.
Let's go,
mate. With your boy Joey B here. Sorry. You were the only one to pick the Bengals in last week's pod. The Rams can make a comeback against the Niners as well.
I think everyone hit on that one.
The Rams and the Bengals in the Super Bowl in Los Angeles. Obviously, we're going to make our picks here. Odds here, and this segment is brought to you by Bet99. All the odds we're about to go through are also courtesy of Bet99. If you go through the Area 51 Sports website, go to the Sponsors tab, click Bet99. If you sign up there for first-time users, we'll get up to a $600 bet match if you sign up now, and you get access to our exclusive boosted odds, so check it out. That's the highest in Canada, so check out Bet99. You can find that on the Area 51 Sports website, like I mentioned, and as always, please gamble responsibly. Ace, run us through the lines here, courtesy Bet99.
So you can get the Bengals on the money line at plus 160 right now. These odds are probably going to change by the time this episode comes out because these matchups got decided today, but I'm giving you right now, live. So if you listen to this episode, go do it right now.
We're doing it live.
The Bengals on the money line at plus 160. You can get the Rams at minus 213. The Rams are favored by 4 points. You could get either of the Bengals or the Rams on the spread at minus 115. And over-under is at 50 points.
That's a high.
So a lot of offense, I think. But let's hear the picks.
I guess I'll go first.
I usually let Andy go first.
Before I get into my pick, I just want to say stay tuned to the Area 51 Twitter channel the week of the Super Bowl. So it'll be the Thursday,
the
10th. Looks like we're going to have some special guests on for Super Bowl for our betting show. Might have a little roundtable discussion, going to get into all the props, you know, what color Gatorade is going to be dumped on the coach, that kind of thing. So keep an eye out for that. In terms of my pick, I like the Rams. I think they're the better team on paper, and I still don't trust the Bengals' offensive line. I think Aaron Donald's going to have a field day, so I'm on the Rams.
Rams on the money line for Andy.
I'm 3-for-3 with my Bengals. You're going to be on the money line, and I think I'm leaning towards the under on the points there for 50. That seems like a really high-scoring game. The Bengals' defense played really well. They held a great KC offense to 21 today. Rams obviously have an unbelievable 24. My mistake. And the Rams obviously have elite defense too. So I think I'll take the under on the points too.
I'm kind of the same mind as Andy here on the picks here. I think the Rams are the clearly superior team. I think Stafford has been a huge difference on the Rams. But I've been counting on the Bengals the whole way, and I get real Team of Destiny vibes from the Bengals. I don't know what it is. So give me the Bengals on the spread and the money line, and I'll take the over on the points too.
Yeah, I'll take the Rams on the money line, and I'll take the under on the points.
We're split here with the money line picks.
The Bengals offensive line is just no match for that front four.
I know. I'm with you. I'm with Andy and Ace in terms of everything they're saying. I agree with them, but I agree with that.
I literally told you that.
It's just like, you know, that Team of Destiny vibes from the Bengals here, man, you know?
I just wanted
meant
to say,
meant to be, you know? It's meant to be.
I wanted to say one thing about the NFL. The Seahawks aren't even in the playoffs this year. They didn't even play in a wild card game. But this has legitimately been the best playoff football I've ever watched in my life.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this has been awesome.
Yeah, agreed.
So, great weekend
football. Yeah, best playoff in a while, for sure.
Definitely. Love the upsets. You just love to see it. And no Jackson Mahomes at the Super Bowl, so that's a win for everybody.
Yes. And no Aaron Rodgers. That's also a win for everybody.
Yes, it is.
You love to see it.
Yes, it is.
Right, Andy?
No problem. All I'm saying is Patrick Mahomes is quickly approaching Aaron Rodgers' territory.
Here. Oh, with his, he better start taking advantage of these opportunities here.
I think, he's been to 4 AFC championship games and won one. So, I don't know.
He's won two.
Because he lost
two?
Super Bowl.
Two for four, but they lost Super Bowl to the Brady last year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I get what he's saying, though. Me and Hayes were talking about that before we started recording.
Don't get that many kicks in the can, and I think Mahomes kind of choked today with the that throw in overtime.
The AFC's gonna be
he almost threw a pick right before that. If Eli Apple was even, like, you know, 70%, he would have got that. But then he made a terrible just into double coverage. Just, I don't know. I feel like sometimes that guy thinks he can't miss, and everyone can, I guess.
He's got to watch out too for years to come. Josh Allen, and you know, obviously the way Joe Burrow's playing, the AFC's going to be
tough. Yeah, the AFC's got a lot of good young QBs in there that can be good for a while. Herbert is good, obviously. Burrow,
Jackson, Herbert, yeah, like
Allen, obviously.
The Chiefs have some issues coming up because if you look at their cap, it's kind of messed up. And, you know, I think probably the five of the best six quarterbacks.
Yeah, what do the Chiefs have? Like $5.50 in cap space right now?
Yeah, like it's hard enough to win a championship. And at least with the, you know, with the Brady, Rodgers, Manning era, you know, like it was kind of always Manning and Brady in AFC and then Rodgers and Breeze in the NFC. But now it's, you know, once Rodgers retires here, it's going to be the best 5-6 quarterbacks all in the same conference. Yeah, so it's going to be tough.
And the Chiefs do have a lot of weaknesses as well. You know, they got
the defense is terrible.
Yeah, exactly. They have some areas to address, and it might be pretty difficult to do it. So they're going to be far from a perfect team going forward. So, you know, they're going to have to find a way to overcome some of those. Excuse me. But yes, this is an NFL podcast, but there, that was free for you. Ace, give me the pre-outro music.
There it is.
I better make sure I hear it. The last two episodes, I can't hear it. The music when I'm talking?
What?
This music, I don't hear it on the way out.
I can hear it right now.
Right now I can, but I couldn't hear it in the actual podcast when I listened to it. I'm going to ask you to check into that, Ace. Right now, I'm going to expose you to all these people. Are you going to read
You going to say anything?
I will. I'm just vibing the music. Give me a minute.
Okay.
There's not dead air. Just give it a second, right? Thanks for listening to another week, everyone. Find us on all your major podcasting platforms. Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts. Just look up Capspace Wins Cups. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Capspace Cups. We're super interactive, so check us out. If you don't listen to Apple iTunes, please go to Apple iTunes and leave us a 5-star review because
I'm a 5-star man.
It really helps with the show. Also, go check out all of the great content on the Everyone Sports Network. Point Shot Hockey, the Canucks Mafia, Third Line Podcast, Terminal City FC, the UFO Show, Van Slam, and Fantastic Writing. It is your home for Vancouver sports content. That's all we got for this episode. Talk to you all next week.
Vancouver selects from the University of Michigan, Quinn Hughes.
From Timrå, Elias Pettersson.
From Waterloo of the USHL, Brock Besser.
From the London Knights of the Canadian Hockey League, Bo Horvat.
To the Tampa Bay Lightning in exchange for JT Miller.
Thatcher Demko with an amazing 43-save performance says, let's play Game 6.
Ladies and gentlemen, please make some noise and welcome the 14th captain of your Vancouver Canucks, Bo Horvat.
Anderson is Elias Pettersson in.